From the state capitol, the Florida Public Radio Network brings you Capitol Report.
Lawmakers say they can save the state $11 million a year by simply cutting off some of those who depend on the foster care system.
Giving up on kids at 21 who are trying to make it is not morally right. You wouldn't do it to your own kids, so don't do it to kids when the state has failed and dealt them a bad hand.
Healthcare issues remain a hot topic at the Florida Capitol.
In the healthcare reform bill, you can have an exchange in your state. And so we think it's valuable and important that Florida control that.
A proposal to give parents more of a say with chronically failing schools draws fire. And lawmakers try to put to rest an ongoing clash with the feds about protecting Florida's waterways. I'm Tramell Gomes, and that's all coming up on Capitol Report. As lawmakers prepare to take up the state's health care budget, a House panel is already expecting to save the state about $11 million. But as Sasha Cordner reports, it's at the expense of those who depend on the state's foster care system.
When Republican Representative Matt Hudson of Naples slashed $300 million from the state's health care budget, his proposal was met with praise from lawmakers and members of the health and human services community. That's because in his plan, Hudson says he chose to put people over things.
We were very mindful to protect our seniors. We had a tremendous amount of opportunities for our senior citizens in Florida to be able to live in their own homes, avoid nursing homes, provide additional assistance to people with brain and spinal cord injuries. We made sure that we were expanding kids' care. We did a number of things that overall are the right things, and the people in Florida expect that.
Hudson's proposal also differs from the $2 billion cut that Governor Rick Scott wants to make to Medicaid services. That made many people during Tuesday's House Health Care Appropriations Committee meeting happy. Others were less happy when Hudson cut the funds for a program that several hundred foster youths depend on, called Florida's Road to Independence. It provides about $1,000 a month to foster kids ages 18 to 23 who are trying to live on their own with a bit of state help. But now Hudson's bill would change the age eligibility requirement by 2 years.
The House proposed GAA for fiscal year 2012-2013 reduces $11.8 million from general revenue funds by changing the maximum age of eligibility from 23 to 21 for independent living services. The bill has an effective date of July 1, 2012, and that is the bill.
That upsets some people who had aged out of the foster care system and who would depend on that money, like 22-year-old April White. She's been in and out of 32 foster homes. White says now the state stipend of $1,200 has helped her accomplish her goals of being a social worker. But without that money, she's not so sure that will happen.
I wouldn't be able to be full-time in school. I would have to be part-time. And without any family support, I wouldn't be able to continue to accomplish my goals and do what I would like to do in the world. And a lot of the youth, that's what continues to happen to them. Without having any type of support, this check is basically, it's not an award, it's not a gift. It's the best effort that the state could make at being a parent to us.
Derek Riggins, a former foster kid himself, says the legislation does not take into account that youth aging out of foster care were failed by the system.
21 is not the time to give up on kids who have aged out of the system because of no fault of their own. I'm a product of the system and had some bumps in the road. Had you given up on me, I wouldn't be the person I am today. The person who is fighting for my brothers and sisters in care, a graduate of Florida A&M and FSU, soon to be law student this summer. Giving up on kids at 21 who are trying to make it is not morally right. You wouldn't do it to your own kids, so don't do it to kids when the state has failed and dealt them a bad hand.
Despite their pleas, Republican Representative Dennis Baxley of Ocala says shelling out cash to foster kids is not helping, especially because there are those who abuse the system.
A little girl buying a $600 dog with her first check, or somebody going out and buying rims for their car. And without the guidance system, I just don't think we're establishing a path to independence to hand out cash.
Baxley, who has two foster kids in addition to three natural sons, says what these kids need is a mentor to help them through these tough times, not cash. He says he never gave his kids $1,200 a month. Why should the state? But Democratic Representative Janet Cruz of Tampa suggested reducing the amount of money these young adults receive.
When I think of what I cover in my household between housing and when they were in college, housing, a car, insurance. I probably did spend about $1,000 a month or maybe a little bit less than that. So today I say that maybe an answer would be to reduce the funding, but to take it away. I would urge all of you members to think about this. If you haven't walked a mile in the shoes of these children, then we should not judge them.
Still, the budget plan sponsor Representative Matt Hudson says the state is already doing things to help foster kids in the system so that they can be more independent. So saving the state $11 million is a good idea.
Because of the proactive efforts on the front end of this, the elimination of this is only going to affect 657. I would much rather see us work harder on the front end than on the back end. I think that's being more visionary. I think that's being proactive. And frankly, I think it's the right thing for Florida. And members, I urge your support.
The measure passed favorably in the Health Care Appropriations Subcommittee along a party-line vote 9-5. The measure was a proposed bill from that committee and now heads to the House Appropriations Committee. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
Florida hospitals could see big cuts in what they're paid for treating Medicaid patients. A key state House committee moved to include those cuts in the Health and Human Services part of next year's state budget today. Tom Flanagan reports that took place as a who's who of Florida health care took part in a ribbon cutting less than 2 miles from the Capitol.
The event was the official opening of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Florida's new Florida Blue Customer Service Center. Pat Garrity, chair and CEO of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Florida, was one of those cutting the ribbon.
Well, we serve the whole state of Florida and intend to be all over the state. So Tallahassee is a very important marketplace for us, and we're very excited about having this store in place because it offers a wide range of services to our customers.
Such services include things like helping members file claims and choosing health plans. The 5,000-square-foot facility also promotes membership wellness. There's an electronic gizmo in the lobby that calculates your body mass index when you stand on it. Just a few miles away at the state capitol, though, lawmakers in the House Health Appropriations Committee found no fat to cut in what is paid to the state's hospitals for Medicaid patients. And while Tallahassee Memorial Hospital CEO Mark O'Brien was praising the customer focus of the new Florida Blue,
Blue Cross is putting forward a yeoman's effort to make themselves accessible to the community at large. And when we look at health care and the personal nature of health care, this gives them an entree and gives the community an entree to work with them on how to look and shape health care services and health care plans in the future. It's a new way of looking at how health care plans are delivered.
Bryant and other Florida hospital executives remain worried about how much funding will be delivered for the treatments those hospitals provide to Medicaid patients. Tuesday's House committee plan would shop more than $290 million from those payments next year. This year's Medicaid cut to hospitals was just over $500 million. Florida nursing homes would also see their Medicaid reimbursements cut under the committee proposal by some $76 million. And this is just in the Florida House. State senators will also be grappling with Medicaid cuts as part of the task of chopping the budget total by $2 billion. Also in the world of Medicaid, there's Florida's ongoing managed care pilot project. The outcome of that has the potential to involve people like John Hogan. He's the executive director of Capital Health Plan, a health maintenance organization based in Tallahassee.
Still early yet in the session, and obviously I think given the economy and the fiscal difficulties that the legislature's facing, you know, there are plenty of challenges, and certainly health care is a huge issue, as it is every year, in terms of finding the dollars to pay for care. So I expect it's going to be front and center, a major issue for the legislature to deal with, and we're watching all that very closely.
And there are other uncertainties facing the state's health care insurers and providers. Blue Cross Blue Shield's Garrity says that includes coming to terms with federal health care reform in the event the U.S. Supreme Court rejects the multi-state challenge to the law that Florida is leading.
We're looking for anything that can help put Florida in a position to be in control of its future. And by that I mean in the health care reform bill, you can have an exchange in your state. And so we think it's valuable and important that Florida control that. If an exchange is coming here, it ought to be Florida-based, not federally-based.
There's also the unanswered question of what happens if the high court sides with the state challenge and overturns federal health care reform. The crowd of healthcare experts and advocates seem to realize not many answers to those questions would be found at Blue Cross Blue Shield's ribbon-cutting party. Most hurried back to the Capitol right after the event concluded. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Tom Flanagan.
Still to come on Capitol Report, a House panel approves a one-stop virtual shop for Floridians wanting to go into business.
Call one number, I'm done, and I can get on about making my business successful instead of sitting for 2 days phoning each agency.
Proposals to allow parents a say in what to do with failing school is under fire from parent groups.
There are avenues to work with the school district, and when you have schools that are underperforming, one of them is not just to pull the trigger and turn it over to a charter school.
And Florida is taking the next step to create its own water quality rules, but some worry the state's proposal isn't specific enough.
What's the difference between saying drive safely or speed limit 25 miles an hour?
The House Government Operations Appropriations Subcommittee today discussed its budget proposal for the coming year. James Call reports as one way to reduce costs and promote business growth, the panel is proposing a one-stop business registration portal for state licenses and permits.
The Great Recession is echoing through Capitol hallways as lawmakers write next year's state budget.
Line 73 is a $50,000 reduction to the expenses category within the Bureau of Unclaimed Property.
Adam Keith of the House staff walks the committee through the proposed budget for the Department of Financial Services.
The next page, page 9, line 74, represents a reduction of 4 FTE and $204,000 in budget authority from the Employee Assistance Program within the Division of Workers' Compensation.
The Great Recession ravaged Florida's economy. Governor Rick Scott's $66 billion spending proposal for next year is roughly the same amount of money Florida collected in taxes and spent in 2005. The state's chief economists say analysts had to go back decades to find comparable drops in consumer spending and tax collection numbers. For next year, they predict Florida will have a budget shortfall of more than $1 billion. That means committee chairs are on the search to identify savings and where they can cut spending. Pinellas Representative Ed Hooper leads the Government Operations Committee. He decides the fate of the budget for departments like the lottery, financial services, and revenue.
Well, it's always a difficult budget. That's in my 6 years, that's all I've known is difficult budgets and reductions. But the only positive thing, I think, is it really, as each budget process comes forward, it really makes us direct our attention, and rightfully so, on what is our core mission.
Hooper presented his plan to the full committee Tuesday morning. The group has more than $219 million to spend on about a dozen state departments and offices.
We've allocated $10.3 million in the budget for the repairs and maintenance of state facilities. We need about $100 million, but we allocated $10.3. We'll improve those as we have the funding available. The reductions totaling $24.6 million in the budget means that 208 positions are eliminated.
Hooper added that most of the positions are vacant, but as many as 73 state employees are slated to lose their jobs. Pembroke Pines Representative Joe Gibbons is the ranking Democratic member on the committee.
We really took advantage of streamlining some different agencies and combining some agencies, especially in the area of IT, where we realized some savings.
IT is information technology, and it is the one bright area the committee members say is in their proposed budget. The panel voted to create a one-stop business registration site on the Internet. Gibbons says it will cut the time it takes a business to get state permits to operate.
It makes us more customer-friendly, which is the object of the game, so that customers or constituents actually see an improvement in services, and it makes us a lot easier to deal with as an entity that people have to come to in order to get licenses, etc.
The committee found $3 million for phase one of the project. The bill directs the Department of Revenue to have the site up by January 2013. It would allow residents to complete and submit applications for various registrations, licenses, and permits. Representative Hooper says it is the most exciting idea he has seen in 6 years at the Capitol.
Call one number, I'm done, and I can get on about making my business successful instead of sitting for 2 days phoning each agency, restaurant and hotel, DBPR, sales tax, all those agencies, the Department of Health, all those agencies that you have to spend time and energy and have a lawyer review the. This is probably the most exciting thing to me the state government has transferred itself to in my 6 years in the legislature.
The panel adopted the one-stop business proposal as a committee bill. It was filed as House Bill 5505 late Tuesday morning and is waiting to be scheduled for its next committee stop. For Florida Public Radio, I'm James Call.
You're listening to Capitol Report on the Florida Public Radio Network. I'm Tramell Gomes. A proposal to give parents a say in what to do with chronically failing schools cleared its first stop in the House and Senate today. The bills are part of a nationwide movement to get parents more involved in public school systems. But as Lynn Hatter reports, the measures are being met with both support and opposition from the same parent groups they're trying to bring together.
Right now, Florida public schools labeled as chronically failing by the state and federal government face a few different choices. School districts can replace principals and switch staff, funding for the school can be increased, or it can be handed over to a private company or converted into a charter school. Under proposals in the House and Senate, if none of those options helped improve the school after 1 year, a majority of parents, 51%, could petition the district to choose another one of those options. It's called the Parent Trigger Law, and supporters like Senate Bill sponsor Lisbeth Beniquisto say parents deserve to have a more visible role in public schools.
Well, anywhere in our communities that schools are struggling, parents have continued to come forward and say they want to have a role in the revitalization of a school, of making the education in their community better for all students, not just their own. So we think it's a good time to move that forward.
The idea for the Parent Trigger Law comes from California, where 2 years ago that state's legislature passed a similar bill giving parents in a failing school a majority vote on whether to turn it into a charter school. Shirley Ford is from Los Angeles, and she's the senior advisor of Parent Revolution, the group that created and backed the original Parent Trigger Bill.
And 51% is a high bar. So if you have 51% of anyone doing anything together in any community, and especially in a community where schools are failing, then that's saying something. That's speaking to the power. That's speaking to the fact that parents are just sick and tired of the failure, and we need to make a change.
Two attempts have been made in California to turn failing schools into charters. One of them ended in a legal challenge, and the other is being used as a bargaining chip with another school to make changes. The parent group, Parents Across America, has been tracking parent trigger laws across the country. One of its founders is Rita Solnett, a former Palm Beach County PTA president. She says the situation in California created nothing but hostility.
It really wasn't a formula for school improvement at all. It was more a formula for shutting the school down and turning it over to private entities. And it was, when I say catastrophic failure, it just created enormous hostility and conflict and tension within communities.
Solnett says the Florida version of the Parent Trigger Law is better than the California model, but her groups and others are still against it. Joining in the opposition is the Florida Parent Teacher Association. Its president, Jean Hovey, calls the bill a thinly veiled attempt to privatize schools. She also says the bill doesn't address why schools fail and why some parents choose to sit out.
There's lots of ways to get parents involved. You need to find out why they're not coming to school. Maybe it's a language, maybe it's a cultural barrier. And get the parents to attend. Maybe go to where the parents are and find out why they're not attending. There are avenues to work with the school district and you know, when you have schools that are underperforming. And one of them is not just, to, as this bill says, pull the trigger and turn it over to a charter school.
Only a few Florida school districts have elected to turn their failing schools into charters. Most have opted to switch out school administrators and provide the schools with extra money. Supporters of the bill, which is backed by the Foundation for Florida's Future, former Governor Jeb Bush's education lobbying firm, say the goal is to get parents involved and not spark dissent. They note that in other states with parent trigger laws, like Texas and Mississippi, there was bipartisan support. And in a press conference Tuesday about the bill, former state senator Al Lawson, a Democrat, backed the proposals.
I am convinced that with this bill that is moving through the House and in the Senate today, that we're going to solve one of those major problems. And that is that you're going to give parents the responsibility to be involved more in their kids' education and to empower them to help move the school in the direction that they need to go.
The proposals, Senate Bill 1718 and House Bill 1191, call for children assigned to teachers with poor evaluations to receive a high-performing teacher the next year. They inform parents that they have the right to request a copy of their child's teacher's evaluation, and it also gives virtual school option to students with ineffective or out-of-field teachers. It calls on districts not to assign poor teachers to already failing schools. The bills cleared their first committee stops in the House and Senate. The House committee vote was 11-3 with one Democrat, Representative Darren Soto, voting for it. The Senate committee vote for the bill was unanimous. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Here's Ronald J. Eben with a look at some of the action around the Capitol tomorrow.
At 11 a.m., America's Harvest, the Big Ben rally, takes place outside the Capitol. It's to increase the understanding of hunger issues in the Big Bend and the state of Florida. The Senate Budget Committee will take up prison privatization on Wednesday. The House Civil Justice Subcommittee will consider PIP, or personal injury protection reform. The House Criminal Justice Committee votes on Kaylee's bill on Wednesday. The bill, inspired by the death of 2-year-old Kaylee Anthony, would make it a felony to intentionally give police false information about a child who disappears, gets seriously injured, or dies. The bill also calls for penalties for the failure of a caregiver to report a missing child to police. And that's the day book for Wednesday, January 25th.
Finally, a clash between Florida and the federal government over what plans should be used to protect the state's water bodies from pollution is on its way to being resolved. The feds have given the state a chance to make up its own rules. Now Regan MacArthur reports a proposal for what those rules will be is waiting on approval from the legislature.
After toxic algae and aggressive weeds began invading some of Florida's most treasured water bodies, state environmentalists pressured the Federal Environmental Agency to better enforce its Clean Water Act. The federal agency responded by setting new standards for the amount of polluting nutrients allowed in water. But Florida officials said they thought they ought to be allowed to set those rules for themselves. And after years of legal battles, the federal government is giving the state a chance to do that. Now a bill with that intent is making its way through the House.
I think the program we had in place with the TMDL program did that. But, you know, with the EPA coming in and calling that to question, you know, DEP has looked back at their information and taken their science and actually put it into place.
Representative Steve Crisafulli, a Republican from Merritt Island, introduced the bill in the Agriculture and Natural Resources Subcommittee. Crisafulli says the measure comes from the proposal brought forth by the Florida Department of Environmental Protections and has already been approved by the Florida Environmental Regulations Commission.
There were amendments put into it, but the ERC adopted those amendments and brought them forward and passed them out.
Next, the proposal needs to get the okay from the state legislature. Experts say the state standards aren't that far off from what the federal government had initially proposed. Sierra Club spokesman David Cullen says that's true, but he says there's one major difference between the two systems that his organization takes issue with. Cullen says the state's plan sets thresholds for the amount of polluting nutrients allowed rather than setting a firm number.
So it's the difference between saying drive safely or speed limit 25 miles an hour. That's the difference. Because you can always say, but I was driving safely. I looked both ways. There was nobody on the street. I'm wearing my seatbelt. And everything can be litigated. If it's a hard and fast number, then pollution is pollution is pollution, and it has to be addressed.
Cullen says the Sierra Club's also concerned about what he calls the plan's failure to implement downstream protective values.
The idea of this is that if you are a property owner or an industry or whatever, the water that goes off of your property, if it goes into a stream that goes into a lake, well, whatever you put into the stream, by the time it gets to the lake, it should not impair the lake.
Cullen said if he had his way, the legislature would vote this bill down, in which case the federal standards would rule the state. Although he says the feds' regulations do leave a little room for improvement, too. The Sierra Club has filed an administrative challenge against the proposed state rule. David Childs, an attorney with Hopping Green & Sams, is on the other side of the issue. Childs says the state rule balances the need to protect the environment and does it in a way that keeps costs down and allows industry growth. But he admits that doesn't mean he thinks the plan is perfect.
Yeah, it's imperfect, and you can endeavor for perfection, but very few ever quite get there. But what this is that this is a comprehensive policy for addressing nutrient pollution in Florida's waters, and it's one that has a broad coalition of support from local governments to industry.
Childs points out that the Clean Water Act stipulates that water quality issues should be revisited at least once every 3 years.
Now, of course, as science evolves, there will be additional changes to this rule, like there are all other environmental rules.
The bill passed unanimously out of the Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee. Right now, it's scheduled for one more committee stop before reaching the House floor. Representative Chris Afoli says he expects the bill to pass without trouble. Once the bill's approved by the state, the Federal Environmental Protection Agency will review the rules. EPA officials have already indicated they would likely approve the measure as it stands now. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are James Call, Sasha Cordner, Tom Flanagan, Lynn Hatter, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to the contributing stations along the Florida Public Radio Network. Taylor Cox provides technical assistance for Capitol Report, and I'm Tremel Gomes, inviting you to join us each weeknight for more reports from the state capitol.